It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have fair skies and 48 degrees. Out at the airport, they are showing 42% humidity, west wind steady at 15 and gusting to 31, and they have 10 miles of visibility. Sunny skies for the rest of the day and mostly clear tonight, according to the Weather Service. Northwest winds gusting to 20, coming down to 5 or so tonight. But look for the rain to begin Wednesday night and to continue through Thursday or so. Coming up on the Midday Report, a Kodiak man who was reported missing has been found. Today is Election Day, with competitive races across the slate. And shareholders at NANA have voted to create a permanent fund, looking forward for the day when Red Dog is no more.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Critical setback in House Speaker Kevin McCarthy's fight to keep his job. 11 Republicans have joined 207 Democrats to move ahead with an effort to remove him from the top position in the chamber, setting the stage for a final up or down vote this afternoon. NPR's Casey Morell has the latest.
If the motion to vacate does pass, the clerk of the House will refer to a list of people who can act as speaker. That list is kept secret and will only be made public in the event that the speakership is vacant. The House will then be forced to hold votes on a new speaker, though that could take time. Members will likely need to meet to discuss the path ahead, and they are already preparing for a fraught process. It took 15 rounds to elect McCarthy speaker in January, in part because there was no consensus alternative then, and there does not appear to be one now. Casey Morrell, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, major market indices have been down 1.5% to more than 2% today, that is. David Wessel, head of the Hutchins Center on Fiscal and Monetary Policy at the Brookings Institution, says he thinks it has less to do with the GOP's leadership fight underway in the U.S. House than the fact that long-term interest rates, like the yield on 10-year treasuries, went up a lot today.
When I look to see what market analysts were saying, it seems mostly to be driven by the strength of the economy and higher interest rates leading people to flee stocks.
Investors are worried the Fed may have to push rates even higher because the economy is resilient. Today, the Labor Department issued a stronger-than-expected report, 9.6 million job vacancies at the end of August, which means more room to hire. A more comprehensive look at the jobs market comes out this week. A new study finds that climate change is affecting one of the best tools forest managers have against wildfires. NPR's Nathan Rott has the latest.
Prescribed fire, the act of planning, mapping, and lighting a fire to reduce vegetation and thin out woods, is a critical part of forest management across the U.S. It's widely viewed as one of the best ways to reduce the kinds of megafires that climate change is making more common. But the new research from the University of California, Los Angeles, finds that climate change is also shrinking the window in summer and fall when it's safe enough for forest managers to light prescribed burns. It's particularly true in Southern California and New Mexico. The news is not all bad, though. More windows for prescribed fire may open up in the winter in some parts of the country because climate change is also making it hotter then. Nathan Rott, NPR News.
It's day two of the $250 million civil fraud trial against former President Donald Trump in New York. He's accused of inflating the value of his real estate assets. The Dow has closed down 430 points. You're listening to NPR News. Earlier today, President Biden's son Hunter pleaded not guilty to felony gun charges in Delaware. He was arraigned this morning on allegations that he unlawfully applied for and purchased a firearm in 2018 despite restrictions on individuals addicted to narcotics. The Major League Baseball playoffs begin tonight, and making an appearance for the first time ever is a team led by a female general manager. NPR's Becky Sullivan has more.
Kim Ng made history in 2020 when the Miami Marlins hired her for their top executive job. She became the first GM not just in the MLB, but in any of the four major North American sports leagues. Ng had a stacked professional resume before coming to Miami, with stints at the Chicago White Sox, the New York Yankees, and the Los Angeles Dodgers. But in Miami, she had a challenge. The team hadn't made the playoffs in a full-length season since 2003. But over the past three seasons, she has rebuilt the roster through aggressive trades and free agency moves. She brought on a new manager at the start of this season, and now her efforts have paid off. The Marlins are back in the postseason with a wild-card series against the Philadelphia Phillies. Becky Sullivan, NPR News.
Turkish warplanes carried out more airstrikes against suspected Kurdish militant sites in northern Iraq today. This comes days after a suicide attack in the Turkish capital. Police reportedly have detained nearly 1,000 people suspected of having ties to the outlawed Kurdistan Workers' Party, or PKK. The Associated Press reports this was Turkey's second cross-border aerial operation against PKK targets in northern Iraq since the attack in Ankara Sunday. It's NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. A Kodiak man, Jericho Sampson, has been found after being reported missing over the weekend. A spokesperson for the Kodiak Police Department says Sampson was found in town and in good health on Monday. The spokesperson said in a call that Sampson was reported missing by his family after missing an appointment last week. The family was concerned about him because he is autistic, but the spokesperson said Sampson is an adult and has no legal guardianship, and because of that is entitled to choose whether or not to attend his appointments. Election Day is today, with competitive races for City Council, City Mayor, Kodiak Island Borough School Board, Borough Assembly, and Borough Mayor. KMXT's Brian Venwa has this report.
For the city of Kodiak, two candidates are running for city mayor, and three candidates are vying for two seats on the city council. Registered voters who live southeast of Mill Bay Road can vote at the Harbor Master Building. Voters who live northwest of Mill Bay Road may vote at the Teen Center, and maps and voters' pamphlets are available online on the city's website. For the Kodiak Island Borough, the school district's Board of Education has four candidates running for two seats. There are four candidates on the ballot for the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly, with a fifth candidate running as a write-in. And Scott Arndt is the only candidate on the ballot for borough mayor, however, he is challenged by write-in candidate Brandon Crandall. Registered voters in the city's precincts will cast ballots for city and borough candidates in the same polling locations. Voters living on Mission Road can vote at the Bayside Fire Hall, and Bells Flats residents can vote at the Women's Bay Fire Hall. Voters' pamphlets and maps for the borough are available online as well. Village voters can file at the Akyak, Larson Bay, or Port Lyons City Halls and at the Uzinki and Old Harbor Tribal Offices. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venwa.
An Alaska-based internet provider, Optimera, is offering faster internet speeds to local customers. That's because the company worked with Starlink to create a community gateway, which is basically a scaled-up version of the individual satellite receivers Starlink users have at home. The Unalaska Community Gateway is Starlink's first. Starlink is a subsidiary of SpaceX, which is owned by billionaire Elon Musk. Optimera owner Emmett Fitch says his company worked with Starlink to use existing on-island infrastructure for the connection. Starlink also set up four new antennas, but the overall distribution of internet services in town hasn't changed.
So the community gateway is on our site, and we worked with Starlink to get it installed. Our crew in Unalaska did the installation, and Starlink techs came out and tuned it in.
The gateway offers a 10 gigabit per second connection. Around 80% of Optimera customers have already hooked up to the new speeds.
When you're dealing with gigabits per second, that's a tremendous amount of capacity. You know, to put that into perspective, that would be enough for every resident in the community to be streaming in HD video bidirectionally at the same time.
Internet options in Unalaska have evolved rapidly in recent years. Optimera was the sole major provider on the island just a few years ago. But that changed with the recent influx of options, including fiber optic. Fitch says he expects the Starlink Community Gateway to bolster competition, and redundancy means that during surprise outages, Unalaskans can still access the Internet.
As we saw with the Quintillion fiber break, that caused a lot of heartache and hardship for people in the regions that were affected by that.
In June, service in Unalaska was affected when a ship's anchor tore a fiber optic cable. Shareholders for Alaska Native Corporation NANA overwhelmingly voted in favor of creating a permanent fund last week. The fund would be taken from earnings from a lead and zinc mine owned by the company. As KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports, the corporation hopes the fund will support shareholders after the mine closes.
The Red Dog Mine is one of the largest producers of zinc worldwide and a major economic driver for the region. It could stop operating as soon as 2031. Red Dog is one of the main income sources for NANA, the regional native corporation for the Northwest Arctic. For decades, the mine has been a major economic engine for the Northwest Arctic Borough and the company. And as Red Dog's end of mine life approaches, its loss could have serious repercussions to both the region and NANA shareholders. John Lincoln is the president and CEO of NANA.
It's pretty difficult to overstate how significant the impact of Red Dog Mine closing could be. The Red Dog Mine alone accounts for over 900 shareholder jobs. Shareholders, their spouses and descendants earned over $55 million in wages.
The newly established fund hopes to supplement the loss of income to shareholders by setting aside Red Dog's net profits for the remainder of the life of the mine and putting them into a fund. Last year, NANA received over $170 million in profits from Red Dog. Lincoln says the idea is to ensure shareholders will continue to have stable dividends once the mine closes.
So by creating the permanent fund, investing it, and using the earnings for dividends in the long term, we ensure that the shareholders now and in the future will have a reliable source of dividends to support them and their lives.
Representatives from NANA say that the fund is modeled after the Alaska Permanent Fund and will generate earnings that can only be used for shareholder dividends. Another stipulation of the fund would be to establish a board of five trustees with an option of adding two investment professionals. The five trustees will be selected from NANA's 23-member board of directors at their next meeting. Lincoln says the vote was historic, both in support and turnout, with over 80% of voting shareholders supporting the change. Lincoln thanked NANA's board and shareholders.
There's been a lot of people have worked really, really hard to get NANA into a place where we are able to do things like create a permanent fund, and it feels really special to be a part of that work.
Representatives from NANA said that the fund would not have a negative impact on current shareholder dividends or other contributions. They said it would not affect the Payment in Lieu of Taxes Agreement, or PILT. The PILT are funds paid directly to the Northwest Arctic Borough. According to NANA, Red Dog funds at least 80% of the borough's budget. NANA's permanent fund went into effect on September 27, after the vote was conducted and verified by an independent third party. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
Today is Election Day, and in Petersburg, the fate of the community's medical center hangs in the balance. As KFSK's Shelby Herbert reports, the hospital board candidates weighed in on everything from the new hospital project to the New World Order.
The New World Order has been spoken by a variety of number of people.
That's Don Koenigs, a candidate for Petersburg's hospital board.
Our population is growing, and there is clearly a philosophy regarding that, all of which states now the population is at over 8 billion people, and they still would like to bring it down. That's an agenda that's before the United Nations.
Koenigs believes wholeheartedly in a far-right conspiracy theory that says a group of shadowy global elites, which he says includes George H.W. Bush, George Soros, and the United Nations, is conspiring to reduce the global population, and that they're using public health and safety measures around COVID to do it. Koenigs touched on the idea at the candidate forum.
I mean, there are some people in the community that may agree or clearly disagree with my reading and my information and say that's just pure hogwash, you know, which is they're entitled to. But is what is the reality and what you see forthcoming will become evident over time, whether it's true or not.
Koenigs holds himself up to be something of a government watchdog around town, and he's especially skeptical of the plans for a new hospital. Koenigs carries a big white binder around with him. It documents what he believes to be inconsistencies with PMC's plans to finance the project. If elected, he said he'd try to bring the project to a popular vote, and he thinks Petersburg voters would summarily throw out those plans, which were set in motion more than 6 years ago. Meanwhile, the clock is ticking on the major systems of the existing facility. PMC put together a comprehensive facility condition assessment in 2015, and it shows that, by almost all major infrastructural standards, the hospital is failing. The latest estimate for the new hospital is $85 million, which Medical Center CEO Phil Hofstetter says would be paid for by government grants. And he says repairing the existing facility could cost the borough upwards of $110 million. Marlene Cushing is running for re-election. She sat on the board for 9 years, and she's also its current secretary. At the forum, Cushing said the way forward is clear. Building a new facility wholesale.
Look at the long-term care, how small those rooms are. Should our elders really be given a spot the size of a parking space to spend the last years of their life? Have you been in the ER? You can hear everything that's said in the next cubicle when you're there yourself in crisis or a family member in crisis. The funding is very tricky and complex and is not completely known at this point. But sometimes you have to be very, very ready to take advantage of it when that possibility comes about.
Jared Cook is the president of the hospital board, on which he's sat for 6 years. He also fiercely defended the project.
As a board, we feel we have done our due diligence to make the best decisions for the community in the future health care of the community. And in getting a new facility, we feel that we're still going in the right directions and doing the best we can to keep the cost as low as we can. I feel that trying to renovate the old building would actually come out of the community's money. And so grants is the best way to get it in a phased approach.
Jim Roberts is also on board with the new facility. He sat on the board for almost 5 years.
We have a good hospital, very good hospital, but the hospital needs a new building. The facility is way past its age. The mechanics of the building, the air handling, the power, the sewer, all that are just failing.
Micah Hasbrook is a newcomer. She said she supports the new hospital project, but she's not sold on all the details quite yet.
So I'm still hesitant about exactly how the funding would exactly look to make sure that as we proceed, we address what our specific critical needs are.
The most expensive option to bring services up to code is to restore the existing facility, which the hospital would also have to try to do while it's still in use. And they'd have to ask the borough to help pay for it. The new hospital would be, ideally, paid for by state and federal grants. But the funds wouldn't come in all at once. And if they don't come through at all, Cushing says the board will have to reassess.
I don't have a crystal ball. I wish I did. I hope it does. I think that this is an opportune time to seek that funding, and I sure hope it comes through.
If it doesn't,
then we're going to have to go back to square one and say, okay, what are we going to do to get ourselves through the next 10, 15, 20 years?
Could that mean PMC takes out a loan?
We couldn't afford to pay off a loan of that size.
Koenigs said he feels like hospital administration owes it to the community to be more transparent. In particular, he doesn't like the hospital board's executive sessions, which are closed to the public.
Well, they shouldn't be executive sessions. They should be very narrowly used. and they have to be significant, substantial, not just at the whim of somebody saying this. Not just something, you know, let's just talk about building the hospital or doing this or what scheme you might have.
Phil Hofstetter says those sessions are private to allow board members to review confidential information about patients, legal matters, and finances. Cushing, meanwhile, is at a loss. The board reopened the meetings to the public and, more recently, moved them into Petersburg's municipal building. But she said nobody ever shows up, and they're still accused of being secretive. Cushing has lived here for almost half a century, and she said she sees a pattern.
There's always been a group who said, we can't do this, we can't afford this, we don't need this, this is highfalutin, we don't need a community gym, we've got the old one from the 1920s. There's been resistance to the idea and fear of the cost down the road. I know that this item has a huge price tag, and that is very, very scary.
The alternative, she said, is even scarier, not having a functioning facility at all. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
The job market heated up in August. I'm Novosapo with a Marketplace Minute. The number of job openings surged last month to 9.5 million, according to the Labor Department. That's opposite the direction the Federal Reserve wants in order to reduce upward pressure on wages and tamp down inflation. For the first time since midsummer, the union representing striking film and television actors and the Association of Hollywood Studios and Producers are negotiating again. The two sides are meeting a week after the Writers Union resolved its strike. Workers at one of the nation's largest nonprofit health systems, Kaiser Permanente, plan to strike tomorrow. They're asking for pay raises and an end to what they call chronic understaffing. I'm Novosapo with the Marketplace Minute.
To celebrate National Walk Your Dog Week, the Humane Society of Kodiak and the Kodiak Animal Shelter are hosting a dog walk and pet costume contest on Saturday, October 7th. The walk begins at the Kodiak College at 10 a.m., and there are two routes to choose from, a one-mile walk or a two-mile walk. There will be refreshments, door prizes, and a photo booth for dogs and owners. Registration is available at kodiakanimalshelter.org or in person the day of the walk.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the third day of October, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 8:18. It will set again at 7:37, giving us 11 hours and 20 minutes of daylight. A loss of 4 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 61 degrees set in 1989, and our record low was 28 set in 2005. Currently 48 degrees under fair skies. Out at the airport they have west winds at 15, gusting to 31, and those gusty winds have caused the Weather Service to put out a special weather statement. Resuspended ash from Katmai Nova Rupt is expected over Kodiak Island through this afternoon, especially on the south end of the island. The villages of Karluk and Larsen Bay are most likely to be impacted. Currently, the ash is north of Akiak, but it could turn to the south, so be on the lookout for that if you have a respiratory ailment in those areas. You are encouraged to go inside and reduce the chances of inhaling this ash. Otherwise, the sunny skies here in Kodiak, high near 51 is expected today with northwest winds to 15, gusting to 20. Mostly clear overnight tonight with the low around 36, northwest winds to 5. And mostly clear in the morning tomorrow, but those clouds are expected to start moving in, and by afternoon, rain is expected. High near 51 tomorrow with north winds 15, gusting to 20. Rain for sure on Wednesday night. It could be heavy at times. Low around 47 overnight for tomorrow night. Northeast wind to 30 miles per hour could gust as high as 40 on Wednesday night. Speaking of wind, Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanek, Kodiak's east side out to 15 nautical miles. Gale warning for tomorrow. For tonight, variable 10 becoming northeast 20 after midnight with 5-foot seas. For tomorrow on our east side, northeast 30 increasing to 40 knots in the afternoon, 6-foot seas building to 11 feet in the afternoon. And for Wednesday night, east 40 and seas to 12 feet on our east side. Over in the Chillicothe Strait, gale warning for tomorrow there too. For tonight, northeast 10 becoming 20 knots this evening. Seas 3 feet building to 5 feet after midnight. For tomorrow in the Chillicothe, northeast 30 increasing to 40 knots in the afternoon with seas to 11 feet. And for Wednesday night on our west side, northeast 50 seas to 14 feet. Looking quickly at our local tides. We have a high tide coming up at 5:01 this afternoon here on the east side. That will be 9.6 feet, followed by a low tide at 11:46 p.m. of -0.2. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 5:28 this afternoon and be 14.8 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 12:14 a.m. of -0.6. Today is election day, and the precincts are open until 8 p.m. Don't forget to vote. The precincts are the following. For Bell's Flats, the Women's Bay Fire Hall, Kodiak Precinct Number 1 is at the Harbor Master Building. Precinct Number 2 is at the Teen Center, and the Mission Road Precinct is at the Bayside Fire Hall. It is a nice day for a walk, but don't go to the South Near Island Trails today. Brecken Construction will be performing quarry operations there, and it will be dangerous. They're expected to be working through 8 p.m., and they'd like to thank you for your patience. Beginning today at 4 p.m., it's Scuttlebutt. It's a galley tables workshop for youth. It's a free storytelling workshop for students grades 9 through 12. They practice building and sharing their stories with the help of experienced storytellers. And that starts today at 4 p.m. through 5:30 at the Kodiak Public Library's Craft Room. For more information, call them up at 907-486-7396. The Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having their regular meeting today at the Women's Bay Fire Hall. That's happening at 5:30. Tomorrow, the Joint Building Code Review Committee will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room at 3 p.m. And on Thursday, the Assembly will be having its regular meeting in the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All these meetings are open to the public, and packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Contact the Borough Clerk with any questions at 486-9310. Kodiak Elders Coffee Tea Hour is tomorrow. That's 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 a.m. in the Koniag Conference Area over on Near Island at 194 Alamac Drive. All local elders are invited to join them for coffee, tea, and refreshments, and Marty Murray will be leading them in a fiber dyeing workshop. All supplies and refreshments are provided, and transportation is available for beneficiaries. For more information or to arrange a ride, contact Elder Services at 907-486-7352. Tomorrow at approximately 10:20 a.m., there will be a national emergency alert test on cell phones, wireless devices, radios, and televisions. They're checking your devices to ensure critical information gets through to you when needed. This is a standard test that occurs at least once every 3 years. It's only a test. You don't have to do anything. And it's just a test. For further information, there's a website. Go to FEMA.gov. Run the Rock registration is on. Register online at kmxt.org for a 5K, 10K, half marathon, or marathon race. Then join us at the Bear Valley Golf Course on Saturday, October 14th for the races. There will be door prizes, a post-race barbecue, and the registration includes the famous Run the Rock t-shirt.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.